Well, it's a match made in heaven. Now, their love story has been seen around the world.
I, Beecher, take you, April.
I, April, take you, Beecher.
I vow to love and honor you.
Promise to remain by your side.
I do.
I do.
This is the story of how a seemingly perfect Christian couple went against evangelical culture to embrace their authentic selves and found a healthier marriage in the process.
This is the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. I'm April.
And I'm Beecher.
And thank you all again so much for all the awesome responses and for listening and for tuning in. And we're going to jump right in because this, I think, is going to be a pretty loaded episode because we are finally to the marriage part.
Before we recorded this, before we mapped it out, April was like, I don't know if we're going to have enough to fill 30 minutes. We have more than enough people. So yeah. Hold on to your hats.
Yeah, how easily we forget and we're writing it out. I'm like, oh, shoot. A lot did happen.
I will say that we are going to start on a more positive note with kind of a funny story. It still hits on where we were in our lives.
Yes.
But we have some more moments of levity in this episode because I will say in our first couple years of marriage before kids, that's what this episode is about.
Mm-hmm.
We had some fun times. Relationally, we were like still best friends on a relational outside of the romance and the sexual.
Well, and I think that's how we were able to make it. We've always had a genuine love for each other, even if some things were hard in the moment. So one of these things that happened, so Beecher and I, we get back from our honeymoon and we are living in a small two-bedroom apartment. Beecher is still working on their MFA, their Master of Fine Arts. So they're doing freelance and staying at home. And so I'm waking up every day and going to my full-time job. And I was working in marketing for a local corporate hospitality company. And I remember one morning I got dressed for work. This was maybe week two of us being married. So very new. And I never really ate much breakfast. I pretty much looked in the fridge and I saw that there was already a poured glass of orange juice. And so I just downed that real quick and grabbed my purse and I'm out the door. And as I'm driving, I'm listening to one of the local radio shows in the morning. And this was a Friday because I remember they were talking about the club scene on Thursday night. And they were talking about like the difference of like when you start feeling buzzed to when you start feeling drunk. And Beecher and I didn't really drink that much. But all of a sudden I started feeling buzzed because I had drank enough to know what it feels like to feel buzzed. And I'm sitting there driving and I'm wondering, am I feeling buzzed because they're talking about it and my brain's just like doing this to my body? And then in an instant I had a flash of Beecher last night making a screwdriver, which is vodka and orange juice. And so I call Beecher and I'm like, did you not finish your screwdriver last night? And Beecher's like, no, I put it in the fridge. And so I showed up to work unintentionally buzzed because I had downed that screwdriver and I definitely felt it.
It just shows that in marriage, I was venturing out being a rebel by pouring myself a screwdriver and then not really liking it, not finishing it, but feeling like it was such a big moment that I needed to save it for the next day. Who puts a screwdriver in the fridge?
I know, it was so funny. But I thought it was hilarious because I also had a reputation of being like a good little Christian girl at my very corporate job. And so I told one of my friends who told my boss, and then my boss just thought it was hilarious and was like, hey, whoa, are you drunk? In one of our meetings, and everyone had a good laugh at my expense. So, but it was fine.
We were branching out in this season of marriage. We you know, were being intimate with each other. We were seeing each other
naked,
and we had a thing because we watched Game of Thrones.
I had never seen Game of Thrones, and Beecher had, and I loved Lord of the Rings and fantasy, and so I was like, oh, let's watch Game of Thrones. So we were a little bit rebellious.
And I thought, I've seen the first few seasons of Game of Thrones, and once again, not visually stimulated by naked women, so it wasn't really a thing for me as far as a man watching something that's a stumbling block. So I was like, yeah, we can watch it. In order to feel better about us watching Game of Thrones because people told us it was bad, we would do Naked Thrones. We'd watch it on the couch completely without clothes. And yeah, there you go.
So we had this thing where if someone was nude on the TV, we would just look at each other. That's what good Christian married couples do.
Was that the reason?
That was the reason we started Game of Naked Thrones.
That's so Christian. Oh, I know. That got way more Christian than I thought. That's fun. Well, I will say in this season before kids, like I said, there was some good moments. We moved to a downtown apartment in Norfolk, Virginia, in an area called Ghent, and we loved it. We would walk to like a pizza place mm-hmm. and a comic book store, and there was an independent movie theater.
Single screen theater, and a movie video rental store.
Yeah. And every Tuesday we would go do a $5 movie and go get like half price appetizers at this really nice, what kind of restaurant was it?
It was South American.
Yeah, South American restaurant. It was so good. So like we lived the city life as much as good Christian married couple people do live mm-hmm. the city life. It was like restaurants and movie theaters and stuff. But yeah, it was
I look back at that time fondly overall. I mean,
it's like two halves. It's like two halves. And we just talked about the really, really good half, because the other half is we're not really clicking along too well in the bedroom.
No, it was very much still a chore. I mean, there were moments that were beautiful and intimate, and I was, like, obviously really loved you, Beecher, but I had never had an orgasm, even up through marriage, so I was feeling a lot of pressure to have one of those, and the more that we would have sex and the more that I wasn't getting one, the more frustrated I was with myself, and it kind of made me want to just not do it.
And for me, I knew that. I mean, she wasn't faking. It wasn't like she was keeping that from me. And I was like, well, let's do it more. Like, I'm willing. We can try this. I was very much down to figure it out. We both agreed that it wasn't good, but I was like, let's go. We can figure it out. And I think that just added pressure.
It added pressure. And to be fair, like, Beecher was more than willing to do whatever I wanted, but I honestly didn't know what I wanted. And I didn't know this at the time. I know now in hindsight and with therapy, but I didn't feel fully safe sexually with Beecher because of how when we were engaged, if we did something sexual, just the repercussions that would come with that. And I also was dealing with sexual trauma from my past that was kind of rearing its head. There was just a lot of reasons. And then you take Beecher's gender dysphoria on top of that, and in my head, it was like, I don't think I can be attracted to this. Like, yeah. And there's a lot stacked against our sex life.
Yeah, but for the record, you weren't seeing me.
No.
Anything femme, so as far as, so yeah.
It was more like the idea of it. And it wasn't even that I felt that way. It was like I had been conditioned to feel this way about a man who wants to be feminine. And it was just the cycle of, so kind of what we would do is during this time, you know, now that Beecher and I are living together and I've got a closet full of clothes that most of my clothes also fit Beecher. And Beecher, anytime they would put on my clothes, would tell me after the fact, and it would be this big confession.
Well, I mean, I would try not to, and there was a few things I would do to try to not get in the closet, because once again, at this point, I had not put on anything feminine since fifth grade, so we're talking, I'm 24 now, so that's 14 years, and so April's at work, I'm working at home, there's a closet, and April and I are the same height, and we are the same waist size, and so I had a friend that I told I get into stuff, like, and so I would try to, like, text him or call him, and we would try to, like, go get out of the house and, like, get lunch, and, like, or I'd try to stay really busy in the house, or, yeah, it was just a really difficult time. And then when April would get home, if I'd been able to put it off, I'd be like, hey, I've had a really tough day. Like, I didn't get anything, but like, you think we can have sex? Because that was sex was a band-aid in the marriage for me. Because once again, for whatever reason, after that, I felt less dysphoric. I don't know if it was because in the bedroom I functioned like a man, so to speak. I don't know. I still don't know the psychology, and I haven't figured that out. But I will say, it was a band-aid. It's not healing. It's not fixing the problem, but it was enough. And so then,
that as a repercussion of that, of knowing, like, I felt obligated to then have sex with Beecher because they were struggling so much. And I was like, well, of course, it's my wifely duty. So then unintentionally that made me start feeling kind of like an object, which was how I felt with the assaults. And it was just one big cycle that I didn't deal with at all during this time.
Yeah, and at this point too, the idea of masturbating was not something that you and I
No.
We're cool with, we had in our marriage, like, we just weren't for it. So it was like, yeah, I was fully leaning on April for all of that. One, when I was actually in the mood, but also when I was just struggling. And so,
yeah,
it was this thing that we did to try to get by, and it was never this great experience, which was tough on me because, you know, once again, the church told me that if I save myself till marriage, it's going to be the best sex of your life.
Right.
Which I guess technically it is, but they acted like it was going to be this otherworldly. And I'm like, I just don't feel like this is what they, like, I don't know, because I've never been with anybody else, but it can't be this.
Well, and there was this piece in the back of my head, because I was aware that our sex life was just felt very forced. And I remember thinking that, did I cause this because I had sex before marriage? Like, is this, were these part of the warnings and all of that stuff?
So while we did have good moments in these first few years and we think back fondly on it, we had some difficulty. I know somewhere in this season, and I don't know, it wasn't like a moment, but I think at some point we did kind of decide, okay, Beecher, you're wearing yourself out thinking this is a demon.
Yeah.
Like it's every time I would feel a draw to the closet or a draw to do anything more femininely. Imagining a demon there every single time was, like I said, just very demoralizing and difficult. And right. I think you saw that.
I saw that. And I also had seen how hard we worked spiritually, like with praying and fasting and like literally laying hands and casting these demons out and going to therapy. And I saw all the work that we put into it to think that we finally had a breakthrough. For it to have not gone away was kind of the realization that I don't think this is a demon. And if it is, then I've got a lot of questions for God, because we've done everything right. We done everything that the church told us to do, and it, you know, it's not going away. So this was something much deeper than that. And I love Beecher. And so seeing them be depressed and mopey, I was just like, you know, let's just look at this differently. Maybe we frame this like not demonic and not something evil that is inside of you, but like it's an addiction, or it's just like, you know, like a fetish, or just something that you enjoy sometimes. And yeah, maybe it's not right, but just don't worry about it. You know, if you make a mistake, move on.
Yeah, I think in general, and I think you'd agree with this, in that season, you kind of blocked it out.
Oh, I definitely blocked it out. Because even when we were talking about this period of time, I was like, you didn't really deal with it that much, did you? And Peter's like, yeah, we talked about it all the time. I was very much in the denial phase. Like, oh no, my husband doesn't deal with this. This is fine. We're just going to keep going. Like, this isn't happening to me. And
because I will say, I mean, I did so many things wrong in our dating relationship and engaged period and even in the marriage. But the one thing I always hung my hat on, so to speak, is that I was honest with you.
Yeah.
And I would tell you, you'd get home from work. And honestly, at this season, I'm not dressing every day. And when I'm dressing, I'm putting on like a shirt.
Right.
Like it was more, so slight.
It was the OCD of once the thought hit your mind of, I want to put this on, then you could not let it go until you put that on.
Yeah. And then, so you'd get home from work and I'd be like, hey, I got into your stuff today. I can give you more details if you want. And then you were like,
most of the time you're like, no.
You said, no, okay, thanks for telling me. It's okay, I forgive you, move on. So like, while yes, it was a move on in that season, I felt like
you dismissed. Were alone in the fight.
Yeah,
place yet where I could be in the quote unquote fight with you to figure it out. Like in my mind, this was a Beecher problem.
Yeah.
This wasn't a problem for our marriage. This wasn't a me problem. It was very much a you problem, and so I definitely kind of disassociated from it.
Yeah, and I think on the one hand, I was really glad that you're not adding more shame to me, but on the other hand, I was like, okay, then I guess I'll just move on. And I, you know, but there was some really tough things. Like since I was home, I did the laundry a lot, and that was always, laundry day was tough for me. Because I'd have my hands all over it, you know, I'd have my hands all over it and think, oh, I really like that. Oh, no, I can't. And the idea of too, it's like there was more shame because it was my wife's clothes. It was like, no, these are April's. Like, these are These are not mine. And so there was more shame, like almost like I was stealing from someone. And there was one time that I was doing laundry. And so we were in apartments. There was three apartments in this old house that we were in. And we shared a washer and dryer with the other two apartments. Mm-hmm. And I went down one time and there was like this, oh gosh, it was like this black, cute tank top that was like a little bit frilly. And one of the other apartments had left it there. Oh my gosh. I visited that thing so much. I never took it back up to the apartment. I never did anything with it, but I knew it was there. And I would go down and look at it and think, I could put this on. This could be mine. This is something that's not April's. It's not my wife's. Like, no. And then I'd like leave it down there, hoping that the neighbors would grab it. And then I'd sometimes just walk down there and look at it.
I never knew that.
Yeah, no, I never told you that. Because I didn't do any, because I only told you when I messed up, really.
Right.
Or when I felt like you could help me. And I remember one day after a few weeks, I went down and that top was gone. And
did you feel like you missed an opportunity?
In a weird way, it felt some relief. But on the other hand, it was like, yeah, well, that was my, I mean, only shot of having something of my own. Gosh, I'm tearing up just thinking about it. I've not visited that because I've never talked to anyone about it. And we weren't in therapy at this time. We made the mistake of both being like, oh yeah, the demon's exorcised and vanquished. Let's move on. We're a happy married couple now. But I mean, triggers were all over the place. Cause I mean, we are Christians. We'll get to our jobs in a second, which very evangelical, but we're living in an area that is generally like trendy, cool downtown area. And so there were like colorful people around. I remember, I don't know if you remember this. There's one person that, was assigned male at birth. I never talked to them. I don't know their pronouns. I don't know how they identified, but they definitely wore dresses. And there was probably three or four times that we were out when we saw that person. Hmm. And I would just be filled with so much anxiety. And you knew, because you would come over and be like, are you okay? Do we need to leave? And like, it's awful to say now, because obviously it's super transphobic, but the reason it was so transphobic is because I hated myself, not that I hated them, and that I couldn't handle seeing their freedom. We literally left a comic book store one time because I was so triggered, and I got really quiet for a couple hours after.
I remember too, I think it was this first year that we were married, that film with Eddie Redmayne, a trans woman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Played a trans woman, and any time that the preview would come on, and we typically, being filmmakers, would go and see every Best Picture nominee, and I knew right away we could not watch that. I remember whenever that preview would come on, I would cringe or try to hurry up and change the channel because you got very obviously uncomfortable.
Yeah, there were triggers all over the place, and I would, you know, if I saw this person in the blue dress, and then, you know, the next few days I'm thinking about it. And, you know, it was just confronted with the question of, if I like that, if they know who they are, who am I? And that question would just spiral me. And so, mm-hmm. yeah. And then, of course, once I graduate from my graduate school, mm-hmm. the day that I graduate, I get a job full time at a large evangelical church.
Yes. Like, the same church that we had started at before, but now Beatrice
full time.
I'm worship leading much more often. And at this time, I had changed jobs and no longer working in the quote unquote secular corporate world. And I am now a producer for Christian Broadcasting Network, CBN.
Yeah, it's the 700 Club. So
yeah.
You've probably seen it on weird hours in the morning and night.
So yeah, so we are both in very evangelical circles while we're going through all of this. We're also co-leading a small group for newlyweds. And I remember, even though we were very evangelical and still very Republican and all of the things, during this season, I started feeling not fully connected with the other women around me. For instance, in this small group that we were in, some of the other wives who were newlyweds, I remember one girl, we had like a women's brunch or whatever, just for the wives. And she asked for a prayer request and was just so distraught because she felt like she couldn't take her husband to the mall because Victoria's Secret was there.
Mm-hmm.
And that if they were to walk by it, he would look at that and then want one of those women and not her. And that he'd lust and then he'd go home and masturbate. And it was like, she literally got teary-eyed about him looking at Victoria's Secret models in the mall. And I was just like, I don't relate to this at all. And then that, and it was in these moments too, where I started realizing that what Beecher had, whatever it was, the gender dysphoria, I knew that they didn't feel that way about women. So I couldn't relate in that way. And I also was kind of like, maybe this isn't so bad after all.
I mean, yeah, but I will say when you had to go in Victoria's Secret to like buy stuff, I had to stand outside and would be really bothered.
Right, because you would be triggered by coming in.
That's not, yeah, because right. I wanted to look at things and I wanted to, yeah. So I mean, there was different.
We were just different.
We were just different. I think in that small group, we realized that we are not functioning like a lot of these couples.
And right.
The and issues that we have are not like their issues.
Well, that was something we had realized even without being in this small group, was that some of the natural gender roles that you are taught, especially in church, but with like complementarianism, then the wife does this and the male husband does this, that we had flip-flopped. Like, for instance, I really like playing video games. I was the one that brought the Xbox into the marriage and like made Beecher play with me. Beecher really liked cooking.
Yeah.
I do not like cooking. I don't really like doing anything really domestic. I do because I have to. But these are just things that we were starting to realize. And we would even joke about it, that we had some roles that were flipped.
Well, I enjoyed joking about it because it made me feel less. I don't know. It normalized it a bit, all my feelings. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was. So I'm getting all these triggers living in this cool downtown area. And then I'm going to work at a church, you know, 6 days mm-hmm. a week. I mean, 40, 50 hours. And, oh gosh, I mean, you know, I'm very much celebrated. I'm literally like 25 working mm-hmm. full time as a media director at a church of 4,000 people. So like, I've got people that have been at that church for a long time looking up to me that are like, I'm over them job-wise.
We were very well loved.
We're very well loved. And I think, you know, looking back on my life, I had a realization, this was maybe a couple years ago, in therapy, like almost one of the worst labels you can have put on you is perfect. That when you're in a society, in a group of people, and you're lifted up constantly as perfect examples. We talked to the youth group, like we were like the perfect newlywed couple.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it impossible for me to talk about any of this with the pastor who is my boss, or the head pastor, or even the pastor that's the counseling pastor.
Right.
Because I feel like, well, no, y'all are the ones telling me that I'm amazing and I'm perfect. And also, you know, it's really interesting being on part-time staff and then full-time staff. There is never any questions that would have given me the room to be honest about it, because the church, from what I feel after all my experiences, the church doesn't want to know that stuff because people are messy and complicated. And if someone's on staff and they tell them, I have been obsessing about this women's top that is down in the dryer of my condo, suddenly the church has a problem. They don't know how to deal with it. So they were quite happy for me never to talk about it. So I inwardly struggled. I would go to, you know, prayer meetings and staff meetings, and they would talk about, if you don't feel right with God, this is what's wrong. I mean, there was literally one time that the pastor in a private meeting was like, if you're listening to anything other than Christian music on your drive to and from church, to and from your life here, they would say, it's not your job, it's your life. To your life here, that's the reason you're struggling. That's the reason you're having difficulty. And so literally at that point, I was listening to like, it wasn't bad music. It was just sometimes listen to other music or my iPod or whatever. And then I remember my boss, who was a pastor, had me take his truck to go pick up something for a video shoot. And when I got in the truck, I turned it on and ESPN radio was playing. And I got so excited because I had like only been listening to Christian music for like 3 weeks. And I was like, ha-ha, I caught you. And literally at that point, I was like, I guess ESPN radio is okay. So like, I was struggling on such a level that I was thinking everything I was doing was could be triggering me to having these thoughts that are impure or
not just everything you were doing, but the good things that you weren't doing.
Yeah.
That you weren't doing enough good.
Right. So literally like I had fasted at this point. I had prayed. I'd done all these things. I'd only listened to Christian music. Like I had done everything I could possibly think of. And there was even one time at this church that I tried to tell a pastor. It was a service, and they were like, come down front if you want prayer for something. And it was, I'm sure it was more than that, but I was like, okay, I feel led. So I went down front and it was like random. All these pastors were up there. I work with all of them. And I just ended up with this one pastor and I walked forward and like, Beecher, what can we pray for you for? And I was like, fantasy. That was like all I could get out. And then the guy was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I don't know. Like maybe sexual, like fantasy. And then he was like, you mean porn? And I was like, yeah.
Oh.
And so I got prayed for again.
And this is why, this is kind of why Beecher and I joke too, that like every dude at a church, an evangelical church, talks about their porn struggles. Like that's, yeah, that's like the one thing that is socially acceptable in church circles for men to struggle with.
Appearing perfect, having your bills and your community and your job and your marriage and everything riding on that appearance being kept up is awful. And so to this day, when I hear about a pastor saying or doing anything that I think is inauthentic, the number one thing I feel for them is pity, because I just am like, you're...
Well, you're in a trap. It's good. And this is a little bit of a sidebar, but we had talked about too, a lot of these evangelical pastors, they leave high school and go straight to Christian college, go straight to seminary. They are making their lifelong decision of being an evangelical pastor, like in their like late teens, early 20s. And when you become an evangelical pastor, especially in this climate right now, you are pigeonholed into holding the exact same belief system for your entire life, or you lose your livelihood.
You lose everything. Once again, the church says this isn't a job, this is your life. That was a saying that was frequently used when we say we were being overworked, which is a whole different tangent. But yeah, no, and it's not like at 22 these people are sitting down looking at all the beliefs of the world and choosing for themselves. Right. They're being encouraged and said, "Oh, Beecher, you're so great. Yes, that's wonderful that you believe this. Believe this. Believe this. Believe this."
Celebrated,
and you
celebrate, right? Yeah.
Celebrated by your beliefs, and then you end up in a place where you cannot be real. You cannot be authentic. And I mean, I'm only 31 now, but even just, my heart just breaks thinking that there's 25-year-olds that are in these environments, mm-hmm, that everyone acts like their lives have been figured out and they don't have any room to talk about anything else. Because I was in that situation. And it's in the moment, you're like, man, I'm 25. I should have this all figured out now. I'm like, I was 25. Yeah. Like, that is young to be trying to... So yeah, it was difficult. And you know, April's at CBN and a worship leader at the church. So you were always at the church. I was always at the church.
I was always either at CBN or the church. Like we surrounded ourselves with people that would just keep pushing the exact same beliefs. And there was no one for Beecher to talk to. There was no one for me to talk to. I was like, we thought we were the only ones in the world that were dealing with this. Mm-hmm. And it's just something you don't talk about. They don't talk about gender issues. They don't talk about it when one day your husband wants to wear a dress.
Yeah.
You know, and if it is, it's completely demonized and the humanity is completely taken out of it.
And so we are in this evangelical culture where there's all the voices are telling us basically, if you're burnt out, if you're struggling, it's because your relationship with God isn't right. And so I had done just about everything. And there was one season, maybe a few days, that I was really, really struggling. And I would say, I probably put on the most clothes that I had ever put on at this point, maybe even a full outfit for the first time. And April came home and I was absolutely just broken because I felt so guilty and so ashamed. And I told you in that moment exactly what I'd done because I just couldn't do the vague, like, got into stuff. And I remember just like crying like a lot. And there was a concert at Regent that night. And it was All Sons and Daughters, which is a worship band. And April was like, we should go. It'll be good spiritually for us. And I was like, okay. And we went and the concert was good, but there was a speaker and it was the pastor from All Sons and Daughters Church. And his name's Jamie George. And the way he talked about the church, the way he talked about Jesus, the way he talked about life was just so different. It didn't, it wasn't spiritual abuse.
It wasn't based on shame or guilt.
And so much of his ministry, because after this, I immediately was like, oh my gosh, I went and streamed like all of his sermons. Cause then I'm, you know, I have in my drives and I'm at the house, I'm listening to his sermons nonstop and loving them because he's a storyteller. And like, he was such a lifeline for me in this season. And he would even, he even said that at his church is like for those that are like, have been hurt by the church. And I, yeah. And I remember thinking like, I've not been hurt by the church. Like I'm doing amazing in my church and they're wonderful to me. And now I realize like the reason all those messages were resonating with me is because I was like in that abusive spiritual environment. And he was this lifeline saying, it doesn't have to be this way.
I remember in the moment, you and I were so moved by that sermon and like wanting that for our life that we thought about just moving to Nashville because that's where their church was located. We're like, we'll just find a job there. We could just pack up. And like, we genuinely
talked about it. Yeah, I was just in a very, very dark place spiritually and emotionally. And it was this ray of light at the end of the tunnel. And we literally thought about moving heaven and earth to get there. We didn't. We stayed there and we kept trucking along, but those sermons were a big inspiration. And I would say his ideas were not as out there, so to speak. I love Rob Bell now, but not as out there as Rob Bell and some other people, but he was kind of this gateway into a better spiritual life, a healthy spiritual life.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it was the kind of the beginning of that for me, which is really, really grateful for.
During this time, so this would have been around 2015, which I think I believe is the year that the Supreme Court ruled in favor of gay marriage. I was working at CBN at the exact moment that the ruling came through. And so I was in my little cubicle with all the other little producers and workers up there. And I remember hearing the bing, breaking news, Supreme Court rules in favor of gay marriage. And yeah. You heard just a unanimous and unison groan just throughout the entire floor of like, oh, I remember the lady next to me or a couple cubicles over was like, oh, Lord, come quick. The evil gays are taking over the world. And there was just this fear and trembling. And they acted like a terrorist attack was coming. And it was, and then I remember looking at like the CNN footage of all the LGBTQ people and the gay couples that were celebrating on the steps of Washington, and they were so happy. But being in this room and hearing all these groans, and I had not really worked on my theology on, you know, gay marriage or homosexuality or LGBTQ, but I knew I didn't want to be hateful anymore because I had met gay people that were kind and that were loving and all of these things. And I remember in that moment, I think it was the first moment that I realized I didn't really belong because I did not feel the same way as everyone else in that room. Like, I wanted to be able to celebrate with the people who were celebrating gay marriage, even though I didn't know where I stood on it belief-wise.
I mean, I feel like back then we knew where we stood on it belief-wise, which is we would have said at that point we were against it because we were so indoctrinated in the world that we were in. But we also didn't understand why everyone is freaking out so much. We're like, if people are going to choose it, then people are going to choose it.
I think where I was that I personally would think it was wrong at the time.
Yeah.
But that it wasn't my job to tell someone how to live their life.
Yeah. And I remember you coming home and even saying that, like, oh my gosh, everyone really overreacted today. Like, I wasn't happy about it, but that was, and I remember, you even pointed that out.
I remember being so annoyed by them. Like, they're being drama queens. So that was kind of a shift.
I feel like this realization for you with the gay marriage not being this big deal was probably a good thing considering the conversation that you were going to have.
Yeah.
In like how many months from this?
Yes. So I have two brothers. They're twins. And one had plenty of dated lots of girls, you know, functioned like a typical heterosexual Christian guy. And then my other brother, Andrew, who I love them both. But my other brother, Andrew, had never dated a girl and at this point would have been 26. So in Christian world, that's like ancient. You know, everyone wants you to be married by your mid-20s or you're like a senior citizen. So I had it in the back of my mind. I wondered if Andrew was gay and I had talked to Beecher about it, but I'd always come back to no, he's not. Cause if he were, surely he would have told me. And like, no, because I grew up in a household that said some homophobic things and Andrew also would say some homophobic things, which, You know, so I was just like, no, no, because he said this, and he's like, nah, no, not Andrew. And so shortly after the CBN thing, so this is still in 2015, I have this dream, and I cannot explain this, but so I'm just going to tell you exactly what happened. But I have this dream while I'm sleeping one night that Andrew comes to visit us in Virginia from Texas, because that's where we were living, and we were sitting right there at the kitchen table. He looks at me, and he says, April, there's something I need to tell you. I have only ever been attracted to the same sex, and then starts crying, and he's sitting across from me at the head of the table, and I'm on the other side, and he starts bawling, and I remember I just go over them and hug him, and I wake up, and I tell Beecher about it. That I had this dream. I was like, do you think it means something? Like, or am I just dreaming it because of like everything going on in the news? And I don't even remember what you said, but.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just like, oh, huh. I kind of moved on.
Yeah. You didn't move on, but I thought about it for a long time. And so about 6 months after this dream, Andrew comes out to visit us from Texas by himself. And I remember, so I have this dream in the back of my head, and I remember thinking, I want to make sure that I say things for him to know that I am a safe place, because I would have been a safe place. Like, I knew if he were to tell me, I would respond well. But I also didn't want to ask, because also in these Christian circles, like, it's also a bad thing to be gay, so you don't want to be like, are you gay? Because that could be an insult. So,
well, yeah, but also, and this is the stupidest belief that I ever believed, I thought if I asked if someone was gay, it might put the thought in their head and then make them gay.
That's so true.
Like, oh, man, they weren't gay till I asked.
Yeah, then you enabled it, gosh. And then their blood's on your hands. Yeah, it's so stupid. So I remember we were sitting at a coffee shop. It was just Andrew and I, because Beecher, I think, was working. And I remember we were talking about LGBTQ stuff, and we were just saying, like, yeah, I think the church has totally got it wrong, which I completely agreed with at this point. They did not do well with the gay community. So I was even saying this back then. And I looked at Andrew, I was like, you know, I actually totally think that you can be gay and be a Christian. Like, I don't see why you can't. And which was a big moment, because I used to argue the opposite. Mm-hmm. And Andrew was like, yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I was like, cool. And so I remember we walked back to our apartment, because we were still living in this downtown area. And we get in and we kind of make our way over to the kitchen. And then the same kitchen table where the dream happens, Andrew sits in the exact same spot that I dreamed. I'm sitting in the same spot. And Andrew tells me that he's gay in the exact same way that I had dreamed, which is a weird moment. But in the moment, all I saw was my brother bawling, and just, he was so ashamed of being gay. And he tells me through tears that he's prayed for God to take it away his entire life, and that he knew from as early as middle school. And suddenly, what I'm thinking of is the time that we left a restaurant because we had a gay waiter, or the time that I said something super homophobic when I saw a gay couple on TV, and just realizing how awful that house would have been for him, and how I was part of that just harm. And I just went over and I hugged him. And it was, like, instantaneous for me. Like, I didn't know where I stood in the theology, but I knew, like, I need to love my brother. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to choose my brother over whatever my beliefs are. I'll figure that out later, but right now I'm choosing my brother. And, I mean, that was probably one of the bigger moments for me, as far as, especially going down this deconstruction path, because it was, like, I felt so much shame over being on the wrong side of love.
Mm-hmm.
And then recognizing that that was what the church told me to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, and for the record, we do have Andrew's permission to talk about this.
Yes. I've talked about it on my TikTok, and I've always asked him, like, you know, can I talk about your story? And he's always been so great. And we have a really great relationship now. But then shortly after that, Andrew, I was like, do you feel safe telling Beecher? And he was like, yeah. So Beecher comes home.
And at this point, Andrew's told, like, no one, right?
Yeah. I was the very first person that Andrew had told. He was 26.
Well, yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, so he comes home, tells Beecher. Beecher's now the second person. And I remember Beecher responding and like, well, I have this thing too.
Oh my gosh. It's awful. It's awful the way that, I mean, it's good that I will say I did to Andrew what so many guys do to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I come out two people. I've come out to, before I came out publicly on TikTok and did this and social media, and before I did this podcast, like I would come out to 100 people on a one-on-one kind of conversational level, mm-hmm. whether on phone, Zoom, or in person. And women always respond with like empathy or fear. I mean, some people respond bad, but those are the two kind of categories. And with men, the number one response I get is, oh my gosh, here's my thing. And
yeah.
then they tell me that they got a girl pregnant and she got an abortion. Or they tell me that they like women's skirts and that I always wanted to wear one. Or they tell me that they like women's tennis shoes and they always wanted to wear them or buy mm-hmm. some. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, so yeah. I did the same thing to Andrew. Andrew was basically like, I'm gay. And I was like, oh, okay, it's okay. I like women's stuff. Like, you know, it was this weird yeah. traumatic bond that, I mean, once again, I guess I will need to ask him how he felt. I know that in my life, I appreciate when men open up to me, but I also would have appreciated a longer time spent on me, so to speak. Like, because I'm coming out. Like, ask me questions. Learn about right. me.
Well, and we still had a lot of fear around what homosexuality would mean. So, well, and also at the time, Andrew told us that, you know, he was side B, which in Christian world, that means that you are fully acknowledging that you are gay and you believe that God made you that way, but you are not going to, quote unquote, act out on it. You're going to be celibate. So that was what he said at the time. And to me, I was like, oh, yeah, that's great. Like, you've thought this through. And
yeah, we were totally on the, there's yeah. nothing wrong with being gay. At this point, it was the side B kind of acting.
Yeah, role, we were like,
we are not there anymore, obviously, but that's right. where we were at the time.
And so he went back home to Texas, and I was on speakerphone when he told my mom and our other brother, and I like opened us all up in prayer, and because I told Andrew, like, I have your back, no matter how they respond, like, I'm here for you, like, I will always be there for you, and thankfully, both my mom and my other brother responded just with so much love and grace, and their beliefs instantly changed too. Like, they didn't really know what they believed, but they knew what they had previously believed was wrong, because we were looking at our own flesh and blood, like pouring their heart out, and yeah, so it changed us.
I will say that it is a good thing that they responded well, because a month after this conversation, we all went to Italy together.
We did. We had planned this for like a year.
And so if they'd responded badly, that would have been a really rough world venture. So a month later, we went to Italy with them, and you know, it was a good trip. It was a fun time. It was my first time really out of the country, besides some islands in the Caribbean and mm-hmm. on a cruise once. So it was so eye-opening and exciting. And April and I both got the travel bug after that.
We did.
And so when we got back, we were like, okay, we are totally going to save up our money for the mm-hmm. next year. And then we're going to backpack through Europe we have kids, because this is our time. I told the church, mm-hmm. I'm going to take a month off next summer. I'm already saving for it. Like,
oh yeah, we had it planned. We were going to do it big. We're like, we need to do it while we're young, while we can. And then I got pregnant.
Yep. Yep.
Ruined that plan.
I was at the Catalyst Conference in Atlanta hearing Brene Brown talk, which I love Brene Brown. Can I just say that? Shout out Brene Brown. Mm. And I flew back.
I was in the apartment alone, just took a pregnancy test, and I bought the one that just said pregnant, not pregnant, because I was like, I'm not messing with those lines.
Yep.
And there it was. Pregnant.
So April.
We were not trying. We were actually trying not to. But I had got off birth control at this point because of hormones, all the things. So we were natural planning and didn't do it well.
Jet lag got us from Italy. So, yeah, so our lives drastically change at this point, because we are, you know, 10 hours away from the closest family living in Virginia Beach.
I'm living in a one-bedroom apartment
in a downtown area not suitable for kids. I'm working at a church job, but I'm getting very burnt out and wanting out. And April is, you know, we're not loving her work. So.
I was starting to get burnt out because this was also like primaries, politics, and
yeah.
Trump was coming on the scene.
Yeah, which yeah. is a great lead-in for what we're going to get into next time. So thank you all for tuning in. Next time, we're going to talk about the season of pregnancy, a move to the heart of the Bible Belt. Virginia Beach was like on the edge, I'd say.
Yeah.
The heart of the Bible Belt, and many, many life changes. and more gender dysphoria. Don't worry, that didn't go anywhere.
That did not go anywhere.
So tune back in next time. Thank you all for listening this week. And once again, send us messages or questions to nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com. And we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. We would love if you would take the time to leave us a review or a 5-star rating wherever you listen. And if you need to get a hold of us, you can email us at nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com or individually on TikTok or Instagram at April Ajoy or at Hello Beecher. Stay tuned for new episodes coming out weekly. Thanks again for listening.